All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. A lot to do today. Beautiful daf, mamish. It's hard to believe that we're coming to the end of Shavuos. One more week, kind of incredible. Okay, so let's go back there. So remember again, today's daf is Mem Gimel 43. We are picking up Mem Beis, Mem Beis 42b at the Gemara, which is seven lines up from the bottom. So Tashlumi Kepa Milan. So let's remember again, the Mishnah went through the items over which one does not take a shvua, and once you're talking about shvua, the Gemara talks about the other ramifications of these items as well. Namely, that shtaros karkos, or I should say, avodim shtaros karkos and ekdeshos are not subject to kefal, to the double payment if they are stolen. So the Gemara says, "Shlomi kefal minolam." Where do we know that from? The Tan Rabbanan are called davar pesha klal. So what do we learn from a klalu pratu klal? I'll call davar pesha klal. So the pasuk says, for any matter of iniquity, that is a general statement, or an inclusive statement, I should say. Al shor v'al chamor v'al se v'al salmo. On a shor chamor sen salmo. So we'll say, item specific, this is the prat. I'll call aveda, for any object which is lost. Chazar v'kala. So we'll say, it's another general or inclusive statement. Klal u'prat u'klal. So we'll have a klal u'prat u'klal. So whenever you have a klal uprat to klal, you define the klal by the prat. What's the prat over here? Ma prat mufurash tavramatal to the gufa mamon. Just like the prat is something that ultimately, again, is movable and is inherently valuable. Af kol davramatal to the gufa mamon. So to the laws of kefal apply to anything that is movable and inherently valuable. Yatsu karko shein metaltalin. Therefore, again, karka is excluded because it's not movable. Yatsu avadim shukshulu karkos. And avadim ultimately, again, are excluded because they are compared to karka. Yatsu shtaros, shafapi shein metaltalin in gufan mamon. So ultimately, again, shtaros are excluded. Why? Because they're not inherently valuable. And hekdish re'ehu ksim. And I will say, ultimately, again, hekdish is excluded. Why? Because the pasuk uses the lashon of re'ehu, and hektish is not called my fellow. Hektish is a separate entity. So I will say, therefore, we essentially learn out from a klal uprat to klal that the items listed in the Mishnah are exempt from the laws of kefal. V'lo tashlumi arba v'chamisha. Similarly, again, they're excluded from arba v'chamisha. My time, tashlumi arba v'chamisha. Rachmana v'lo tashlumi shloshe v'arba. Well, this is actually very interesting. Once you exclude them from kefal, remember again, tashlumi arba v'chamisha, the 4 and 5 time penalty payments, builds on the kefal payment. Once there is no kefal, then by definition it's not arba v'chamisha. Why? Because without kefal, Rabosai, it becomes not arba v'chamisha, not 4 or 5, but rather 3 or 4. And that's not the penalty payment that the Torah mandated. Therefore, once there's no kefal, there's also no arba v'chamisha by these items as well. Shomer chinam eino nishba. It will say if an unpaid custodian was watching any of these items and it's stolen or lost, he need not take a shvuah that he was not negligent. Minahan mili. Where do we know this? From the Tanur Avon, it will say tap of mem gimel. Ki yitein ish areyehu klal. Pasuk says, if a man will give to his fellow to watch, that is a klal, that is a general statement. Kesef al kelim, so either money or utensil. Prat, that's a specific statement. Lishmar, to guard. Chazar uklal. Chazar v'kalal. So we'll say that is another general statement. So what do you have over here? Klal uprat uklal. So iatodan elakina prat. So whenever I have a klal uprat uklal, so I always judge in accordance with the specific statement. Ma prat mafurash tavramatal to v'gufa mamon. Just like Rabbi Osai, the prat kesef okelim is something that is movable and inherently valuable. Af kol davar hamatal to v'gufa mamon. So Rabbi Osai, the shivua for a shomer chinam. Ultimately, again, it's only over an object that is inherently valuable and movable. So the Gemara says, Yatsu karko shei metaltlin. This excludes, therefore, from the shua of the shomer chinam, karko, which is not movable. Yatsu avodim shukshulu karko. So it excludes avodim that are compared to karko. Yatsu shtaros sha'afapi shei metaltlin in gufan mamon. It comes to exclude shtaros v'arabosa because even though they're movable, a shtar is not inherently valuable. Hegdish reyuksiv, and I will say it excludes hegdish. Why? Because the pasuk by Shomer Chinam says, "I give something over to my fellow," which indicates that the shvuah is governed by a relationship between two people, not with a relationship to hegdish. Good. No say schar eino mishalim. We'll say if a person is a paid custodian, shomer sachar, he would not go ahead. And now remember, under normal circumstances, shomer sachar pays for gneva v'aveda. Something is stolen or lost, a paid custodian has to repay the owner of the object. Yet the Mishnah teaches me that for any of the aforementioned objects, avodim, shtarlos, karkoos, hekdeshos, so no say schar does not have to go ahead and knows he's chayv, doesn't have to pay. Assuming Allah Rabbah said, where do we know this from? The Tanur Rabbanon, ki yitin ish arei ehu klal. So we'll say it's the same klal or patu klal. Ki yitin ish arei ehu klal. A person will go in and give to his fellow. This is told by a shomer sachar, right, to watch. So we'll say that's a klal. That's a general statement. As a general statement, chamor oshar oseh. Ultimately, again, a donkey, an ox, or a sheep, prat. That's a specific statement. V'chol behema lishmar, and any or any animal to watch. Chazar v'kalo klalur patu klal. So klalur patu klal. So we'll say it's the same klalur patu klal as we saw before. The prat ultimately tells about the klal. What's just like the prat is davar hametaltal v'gufa mammon, something that is movable and inherently valuable. So to a shomer sacha only swears for something that is movable and inherently valuable. Hekdish is excluded because re'ehu k'siv. Fine. Rabbi Meir Omer Yishtram Shem Kekarka v'nukarim. So also remember again, the Mishnah recorded an interesting machlokes. What was the machlokes? We'll say, what happens if I go ahead and I give Ruvain over 10 laden vines? 10 vines with grapes on them. I come back and I clean them, and what happens? Ruvain says, you only gave me 5. Rabbi Meir says, that's a shvuas mod de b'mikzas. Or I should say, that's mod de b'mikzas, and there's a shvua. Chachamim say, no, it's not the mod de b'mikzas. And I will say, now, the pashtos, what's happening over here is what? What's happening over here is, well, not pashtos, what the Mishnah says is, the Chachamim say, kol ha-mechubar l'karka, harehu kikarka. Anything which is attached to the ground is like ground. Therefore, according to the Chachamim, admitting 5 of the 10 vines is not subject to the Shua Modi B'Mikzas. Why, Rabbi Hussein? Because as we just exhaustively proven, so Shua Modi B'Mikzas does not apply to Karka. So therefore, again, that's the Machlokis. Mechlel, Rabbi Meir Sover Kal Mechubar L'Karka Enoki Karka. So are you telling me then that Rabbi Meir holds that something that is attached to the ground is not reckoned like the ground? Meaning, Rabbi Meir, so Rabbi Hussein, it seems to have that what's at play over here is that the Chachamim hold anything that's attached to the ground is like karka, and Rabbi Meir holds that no, if it's attached to the ground, that doesn't automatically make it like karka. Is that true? If that's the case, ad miflegi betuunos, lifligi besrukos. Well, say if that's the case, then why do you have to set up the case as laden vines? In other words, the machlokis would be just about vines, because the idea over here is, it seems to be the machlokis is something attached to the ground considered like karka or not? Rabbi Meir says no. Chachamim say yes. As such, again, why the need to set up the machlokis with laden vines? Make it even barren vines or empty vines. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chinin, no. What's the case? Hacha ba'anavim omdos li bascha kimifli. Rabbi Yossi, the machlokis over here is with vines that have grapes, but the grapes are ready to be harvested. Meaning, they no longer need the vine. They're ready to be picked. So it says the Gemara, so what's the machlokis over here? So the Rabbi Meir Savar, ki b'tzuras dami, and Rabbi Meir holds that of anavim ha'omdos li batzer ki batzer dami, that once the grapes are fit to be harvested, it's as if what? It's as if they are already detached. It's as if they are already detached. And therefore, again, even though they still sit on the vine, they don't have the din of karka, they have the din of metaltalin, and therefore, again, it's a case of mod de b'mikzas. V'rabbanan savri, lo kibitzuras tamim. The Rabbanan say, no, as long as it's attached, Rabbo say, whether it needs the vine or not is irrelevant. If it's attached to the ground, then what? Then ultimately, again, it has a din of karka. As din of karka, so we'll say, ultimately, again, we paskin, or I say the Rambam paskin, like Rabbi Meir. Namely, that anavim habitzuros kibatzur dami. That once the grapes are fit, are fully ripened, and no longer need the vine, even though they're still attached to the vine, we view them ultimately, again, as halachically detached. And therefore, again, partial admission of a claim in this type of situation would trigger a shvas modu mikzas. Amar Abaye, excuse me, ein nishban ela adav shemidah mishkal. So then, Rabbi, remember again, the Mishnah said that a shvuas modu mikzas is only triggered when we're dealing with items that could either be, that could be measured, that could be weighed, or that could be counted. So it says the Gemara, Amar Abaye. So we'll say, what that, remember again, the case in the Mishnah, for example, was, if I say to Reuven, Reuven, I went ahead and I gave you a grain, a storehouse filled with grain. And Reuven said, look, whatever you gave me is the amount that's there. So I'll say, ultimately, again, there's no shvua in that case. Why? Because lemaisa, again, we're dealing with amorphous or ambiguous amounts. When something, when the claim is not clearly defined in terms of weight, measure, or amount, then there's no shvua mitzvah. On the flip side, if I say, Reuven, I gave you a storehouse with grain that went up until the support beam, and Reuven says, no, you only gave me a storehouse with Reuven that with grain that goes up to the window, then I both say that's a measurable amount. So because it's a measurable amount, it triggers the shvua mitzvah. So we'll see, Abaye has an interesting distinction here. Abaye says that the only time we say that such an amorphous claim doesn't trigger a shuas modu b'miksas is if I say to Reuven, I gave you a bayis stam. I gave you a house filled with stuff. Aval amrle bayis ze mole, then yediatanos. It will say if I specify the house and I say this house, I identify the house, then by definition Abaye says that even according to Then that would be a defined claim. Rashi says, Yediyah Tanase, it's in the third short line in Rashi. Techevan do amrali bayis zemole, veze machzira lo chasera, mira chasrona. But since he identifies the home, and he says the home was full, and now I see the home is not full, then by definition that triggers a shvuas mode b'miktsas. To which the Gemara says, "Amalei Rava, if that's the case, ihachi ad tani seifa ze omer ad haziz, ze omer ad achalon chayiv." If that's the case, then this last case I was saying the Mishnah, which says, "I see to Reuven, I gave you a storehouse filled with grain, and excuse me, I gave you a storehouse filled with grain up until the support beam." And Reuven says, "No, it wasn't until the support beam, but rather it wasn't until the window." We'll say first wide line mem gimel amud aleph liflog v'lisnei b'didei. Why don't you go ahead and simply make a distinction within the previous case itself? The medra amurim. When is this true? The bayis mole ava bayis ze mole chayiv. Rav Zerbo say, if that's the case, you don't have to introduce a new case. Just say, when do we say that it's not a shulam odu mikzas? Only when he says bias, the house. That's when it's too amorphous, too ambiguous, no shulam odu mikzas. But if he says bias zemale, then ultimately again, and Reuven says, no, whatever you see is what you gave me, then that can trigger shvua. Ela amarava, rather Rav Zerbo say, Rav has a different interpretation. And this is the interpretation we accept. The olam eno chayev ad shiyetanena b'davish shemido mishkal. In reality, the only time Shuas Modu B'Miktsas is triggered is when the claim, Rabbi say, is measurable. The claim is measurable either through weight, through amount, or through count. The Mida Mishkal Ubeminyan. So I'll say, so again, so either measurement, weight, or amount, number. So the Gemara says, V'yoda lo b'davish sheba mida u'b'sheba mishkal v'sheba minyan. So I'll say, so therefore again, what Rava comes along and says, no, is in order for a claim to trigger a shvuas modu b'miktsas, Rava say. So again, the claim has to be a measurable claim, either mida mishkal u'minyan, which means, again, measure, weight, or number. There has to be some type of metric to measure the actual claim, and the partial admission must also be for a certain amount as measurable through mida mishkal uminyan. So the Gemara says, Tanya kavase di Rava. We have a rice that supports Rava. Kor tvua libi adecha. We'll say, if I say to Reuven, you have a kor. A kor is a measurement of wheat. Reuven, you have a kor of my wheat in your hand. Vala omra in lechabiyadi. And Reuven says, I've got nothing of yours. So pater. So we'll say again, that's a pater. That's a kofer bakol case. Right? He admits nothing ultimately again. And therefore, he is pater. On the flip side, listen to this. Not on the flip side. It's along the same lines. Menorah gedola yesh li biyadecha. Reuven, you have a large menorah of mine. So what does Reuven say? Ein lechabiyadi ela menorah kitana. I don't have a large menorah, I have a small menorah. Rabbi says, what's the halacha? Potter. Rabbi says, the assumption over here is the reason I'm potter is why. Look at Rashi. El menorah kitana potter. De'ein ha-hodah mimin ha-kfira u'mashetanu la-hodah. So Rabbi says, this is a little bit different. See, what this is saying over here is, and we learned this a few days ago, that the hodah, the admission, has to mirror some element of the claim. So the Gemara is suggesting over here is as follows. If I tell Reuven, you owe me a large menorah, and he says, no, I owe you a small menorah. So we'll say, so even though you you'll say, well, it's the same thing, menorahs and menorahs. No, it's not. Because I will say a large menorah and a small menorah are two distinct, different entities. Therefore, as opposed to, I say, Reuven, you owe me $1,000, and Reuven says, no, I owe you $500. I will say, there, the admission reflects some element of the claim. If I claim a large menorah, he admits a small menorah, I will say, then again, what he's admitting is not what I'm claiming. Therefore, he's potter. Azura gidoli yeshli biyadecha. Similarly, again, I say, Reuven, I gave you a large belt, right? I deposited with you a large belt to watch. I only have a small belt of yours. So we'll say again, putter. In these cases, ultimately, again, it will be putter. Why? Because again, so I'll say, I just want to point out over here, the Gemara is bringing in two different concepts. Concept number one, which is the concept we started with, which was that both the claim and the admission has to be something measurable. So something objectively measurable. Either b'mida, b'mishkal, u'b'minyan. Either through number, through weight, or through some other type of metrics, some other type of measure. But if the claim and the admission is somewhat ambiguous and amorphous, then by definition it cannot trigger a modu mixas. That's principle number one. Principle number two, which is that the hodah, the admission, must mirror some element of the claim. Remember, it's only Sonny Reb Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion who holds that the Odah doesn't have to be Miminatana. We saw that Shita, but we don't pass in that way. But again, if the Odah, if the admission, does not mirror any element of the claim, then Lemaise again, it's not Shulas Modu Mixa. So we'll watch this. Aval, Amarlo, Kort Vo Yeshli Biyadecha. So we'll say this is the flip side of the Braisa. I say to Reuven, you owe me a core of wheat. Evala Omer In Lechabiyadi Ela Lesech. And Reuven says, I don't owe you a kor, but rather I owe you a lesach. Lesach is a smaller amount. Then what? Chayev. Reuven says, what is that called? That's called mod divamiktas, partial admission. Or menoras bas eser litrin yeshli biyadecha. Or I say, Reuven, you owe me a menorah that is worth 10 litrin. Or Shabbos says, a measure of gold or a measure of silver. Yeshlecha biyadecha. Ein lecha biyadi ela bas chamesh litrin. And he says, no, I only owe you a menorah that has a weight of 5 litrin. Then Abbas said, that's also called Modim Mixas and he's Chayiv. So the Gemara says, Klalo Shal Davar, Li Olam Eno Chayiv, Ad Shi Yitanenu, Bidavar Sheba Mida, Vesheba Mishkal, Vesheba Minyan. Abbas said, therefore, again, the Klal is that a Shul Modim Mixas can only be triggered when the claim is measurable. When the claim is a measurable claim, through Mida, Mishkal, and Minyan, through measurement, through weight, or through number, Viyodelo, and ultimately, again, and furthermore, again, the admission, Rabosai, is also with something that can be measured, that is quantifiable through Mida, Mishkal, and Minyan. So it says the Gemara, Klalo Shal Davar La Suyemai. Rabosai, whenever you have a statement like that, a Klalo Shal Davar, the general principle, that statement usually comes to include something additional as well. What is that coming to include over here? My Lav La Suye Bayis Ze Mole. Bosei bePashtos, it seems to come to include what Bosei, the case of where I say this home was full. That seems to be a specific enough statement to what Bosei to go ahead and trigger a shvuas mod debemiktsas. But if that's the case, umayshna menorah gedola umenorah kitana. So Bosei, listen to this. Why is it that so what's different about the case of menorah gedola and menorah ketana? So remember again, in the first part of the Braisa, the Gemara said that if I say to Reuven, I deposited with you a menorah gedola, a large menorah. And Reuven says, no, you only gave me menorah ketana. We'll say, what's the halacha? The halacha is he's potter. And we'll say, why is he potter? So the Gemara says, because lo hodolo, mashetano lo hodolo, umashetano lo tano. Because we'll say, that which I claimed is not what Reuven admitted, and that which Reuven admitted is not what I claimed. In other words, we'll say, I'm claiming an object that is A, and Reuven is admitting an object that is B. So therefore, the admission does not in any way mirror the claim. So it says the Gemara, I don't understand. Ihachi, bas eser, Bas Chamesh Nami Mashatano Lahodolo Umashahodolo Lotano. I know many of you were probably thinking this. When we read the second part of the Braisa, it was said when I claimed from Reuven, I deposited with you a menorah that was 10 litrin. And what does Reuven say? Or well, deposit with me a menorah that was 5 litrin. So we'll say, so just to give the equivalent, Reuven, I went ahead and I deposited with you a 20-pound menorah. And what does Reuven say? You gave me a 10-pound menorah. So we'll say, I don't understand. Why, and yet, what did the Braisa say? Right, Chayiv. He's Chayiv Shomo Mitzvos. Why? Why? In other words, why is that not like the case of menorah gedola, menorah ketana? Well, let's say, again, a 10-pound menorah is not a 20-pound menorah. It's two different entities. As such, again, why don't I say that in this case also, that which was admitted does not mirror the claim? This is interesting. To which the Gemara Rabbi Yitzchak says, what are we talking about? We're talking about, let's say, a menorah that is made up of independent pieces. Which means, Rabbi Yitzchak, that the menorah, you could screw on extra pieces to it. So, the modele mine. Because Rabbi Yitzchak, essentially, when I claim a menorah that's Esther Litrin, really what I'm saying is that Esther Litrin is made up of multiple independent pieces that are screwed on or that are attached to the menorah. When Reuven admits that he owes a 10-pound menorah, so we'll say what he's essentially arguing is what? The number of attached appendages. But Lamaisa, the entity is the same. Meaning the menorah itself is the same, it's just the shaylav, I say there's whatever, there's 10 pieces to it, and Reuven's admitting that there's 5 pieces to it. But Shachuyos means is, by definition, it's a type of menorah that could have pieces attached and detached for it. As such, the admission, in fact, mirrors the claim. So the Gemara says, menorah Shachuyos askinon, the kamod lamine, ihaki, azuranami, nisne valokme, bidelaifi. So we'll say, so why don't we say the same thing by the belt? Or as remember again, what was the case of the belt? I claim to Reuven. I say, Reuven, you owe me. What was the case? What was the lashon over here? Right? Azura Gidola. Right? I claim, Reuven, you owe me a large belt. And what does Reuven say? You owe me a small belt. Oh, excuse me, I only have a small belt. So we'll say, remember again, the Brisa said, I'm Potter. Why? Why don't we just say, what's the case, Rabbi Yosai? Why don't we say that it's a case of an adjustable belt, right? Rashi says over here, Bidalaifi, Rashi says, Azura nami lisni, Azura bas esra amos yishli biadecha, Fa'lo omer ein locha biadi ela bas chamesh, Chai velokma ba azura bas chatichos harbe, Velaifi adati betfiras machas. So we'll say, why don't I say that when it comes to a belt, we're talking about an adjustable belt that could be adjusted ultimately again through sewing, through needle and thread. So we'll say, so why don't I go ahead and say that's the kind of item that we're talking about over here. And make his honors, if I'm going to deal with a menorah shel chulyos, if I'm going to go ahead and deal with a menorah made up of disparate parts, why don't I go ahead and say that I'm talking about an adjustable belt? And say that again, when I claim a large belt and Reuven admits a small belt, we are talking about really the same type of entity, just the shaylav, was it stitched up, was it not stitched up, the pieces in, the pieces out, to which the Gemara says, Ella, bidalaifi lo katani. Obviously, we're not talking about that kind of case. Hach inami b'shel chuyos lo katani. Rabbi, say one second. If we're not talking about that kind of belt, then we also, what? Can't be talking about that type of menorah. In other words, we'll say, you can't have it both ways. If it's a menorah shel chulyos, then it has to be essentially a belt shel chulyos as well. And if it's not a belt shel chulyos, then it's not a menorah shel chulyos. So what is the case? What's the case of Osai? So just understand what we're trying to do. All we're trying to figure out is as follows. We have two cases. Case number one, which in Brisa part one, was I claim Reuven, I deposited with you a large menorah. Reuven says, you gave me a small menorah. What's the halacha? Potter, no shvua. Why Rabbi Yosai? Because we say that which Reuven is admitting is not that which I am claiming. I am claiming an entity that is called a large menorah. He is admitting a different entity called a small menorah. Therefore, the hodah is not mimin hataina, and therefore no shvua. Yet, in the second part of the Brisa, what's the halacha? I claim a 20-pound menorah, and Reuven admits to a 10-pound menorah. That is the shul mode makes us. I don't understand. Isn't a 10-pound menorah and a 20-pound menorah two different entities as well? Isn't that the same thing as menorah gadol, menorah katan? So what's the pshat? Let's listen to this. Ela amrav baba bar mamo, shiny menorah, hoil v'yochal legorera, v'lamida chamesh lichim. So also here's the distinction. The distinction ultimately, again, is that when the machlokis is about the weight of the menorah, they can be talking about the same menorah. How so, Rabbi Yosai? Because if I deposited with Reuven a 20-pound menorah, what could Reuven do? Reuven could chisel off some of the gold, some of the silver. So it could be the same menorah, but through chiseling of the menorah, I could diminish the weight. So Rabbi Yosai, as opposed to menorah gadol, menorah katan, Rabbi Yosai, which are two distinct entities. So because ultimately, again, when the disagreement is about the weight, so mamish, they could be disagreeing in the same object. Just, I gave it to Reuven in one state, and Reuven chiseled it down afterwards. So therefore, again, that's the Shulam Modim Mikzas. As opposed to Menorah Gadol, Menorah Katan, which we'll say the Gemara understands to be two fundamentally different and distinct types of objects. Good. Beautiful. Says the Mishnah. We'll say Mishnah bottom of Mem Gimel Amadalef. Hamalve es Chaver al Mashkin. Listen, we'll say these are fascinating cases. I lend Reuven money with a Mashkin, with collateral. So we'll say, remember what that looks like. I give Reuven $1,000. He gives me an object as collateral. Okay, so va'avad mashkel. Oh, we'll say what happens. This, get ready. Refill your coffee right now. Right, we'll say, listen to this. What happens now? He loses the mashkel. Right, so Reuven goes ahead. Reuven loses the collateral. So we'll say now the shaila is: what does loss of collateral do to the ability of the lender to collect? So va'avad mashkel. So we'll say now, watch this. Now here's where it gets interesting. Here's what we'll say. So you know where this is going, right? So where is this going? Now the dispute is going to be about what we'll say: the value of the mashkel. So watch this. Amarlo, selihil visicha. So I say, Reuven, listen, Reuven, I lent you $1,000, but the mashkel was only worth $100, right? You will say, in other words, so collateral isn't automatically, see, in the paradigmatic case of collateral, I lend Reuven money, and I collateralize an object that is the value of the debt. It secures my ability to collect. And the way it normally works is, if I don't collect my money, I would say, I borrow money from the bank, the bank places a lien in my home. My home is collateralized for the bank, so the bank wants the cash. If I don't give them the cash, they're going to take my house. So the mice, again, says the Gemara, that's the paradigmatic case of collateral. But again, it's not always like that. Sometimes a person would just rather have some object that is a value, even if it's not for the full value of the loan. So I say, Reuven, I lent you $1,000. I'm the lender. I lent you $1,000, but the collateral itself was only worth $500. So on the other hand, it really says, no, you lent me $1,000, and what? The collateral was worth $1,000. We're done here. So we'll say, what's the halacha? Pater. And we'll say, ultimately, again, when we say pater, what pater means is there's no shvua that's necessary in this particular case. Right? Because we're both saying, remember, we're still in the sugya mod de b'mikzas. There's no mod de b'mikzas over here because Reuven is not admitting that he owes the lender anything. On the other hand, selihil v'sicha lav shekel yeshava, I say, Reuven, I lent you $1,000, but the collateral is worth $500. And what happens? Va'lo omer, lo kiela selihil v'sani alav, u'shlosha dinarim hayashava. So also, listen to this. On the other hand, let's say Reuven says, I say, Reuven, I lent you $1,000, but the mashkel is worth $500. Reuven says, no, you lent me $1,000, but the mashkel is worth $700. So I'll say, in that case, what do we have? We essentially have a shur mod de b'miktsas, and ultimately, again, Reuven will have to swear to the value of the collateral. Sele hilvi sani alav ushtayim hayashava. So we'll say, listen to this. So now, we'll say, this is a fascinating case. Reuven, the borrower, says, listen, Silber, you lent me $1,000, but you know, the collateral was worth $2,000. So now you lost the collateral. Now you owe me. You lender owe me, borrower, $1,000. Va'lo omer lo ki ala selihil v'sicha lo v'sela yeshav. I say, no, that's not true. I lent you $1,000. The collateral was worth $1,000. So we'll say, what's the halacha? Pater. We'll say, this is just the flip. This is just the flip case. In the flip case, again, it was the lender making the claim. Here it is the borrower who is making the claim. On the other hand, selihil v'sani lo v'shtaim hayeshav. So we'll say, again, Reuven says, Silbury, lend me $1,000, but the mashkel is worth $2,000. And what happens? Va'lo omer lo ki ehisala visicha alav chamisha dirham hayeshava. And I say, no, not true. I lent you $1,000, but the mashkon ultimately again was worth $1,500. So we'll say, in that case, again, there's a shumo demiktas, and I have to swear. And we'll say, the Mishnah ends off, uminishpa. By the way, who swears in this case? Who is it that's swearing? So we'll say, we're going to qualify this thing in just a little bit. Misha hapikadon etzler. We'll say, this is a riveting statement. You know who swears in these cases, Rabbi Osai? He who is in or was in possession of the collateral. Why? Shema yishavazeh, out of concern that maybe the other party, i.e. the borrower, will swear, because also remember it is the malvin, it is lender as the collateral, we're concerned that maybe the borrower will swear, v'halo v'yotzi ala sapikadon. And it'll turn out that's what? It'll turn out that the lender in fact was in possession of the collateral, will take out the collateral, will produce the collateral after the oath has been taken. What's happening over here? Take a look at Rashi. Misha pikadon etzla. So we'll say, first of all, mi nishba kama hisa shava, who swears about the value of the pikadon? Mi shapikadon etzlo. he who is in possession of the pikadon, says Rashi Hamalva. Ultimately, again, it is the lender. What are we concerned about? V'yotzi halas hapikadon, v'shema lo diktek ze b'shuma, v'yifselenu le'edus l'shvua. So we'll say, what are we concerned about? We're concerned that if the lender, in fact, does have the pikadon, and let's say he's lying, and now what ends up happening? The lover goes ahead and takes a shvua. Now it could be that he's mistaken about the value of the collateral just by mistake, and then what's going to happen? He's going to take a shvua. The malva then is going to say, "Tada!" He's going to produce the pikadon afterwards, and ultimately he's going to make the lova into a liar, going to passel him for edus, going to passel him for a shvua. And as well say, essentially, we're going to see what the Mishnah is saying over here is when one person was in possession of the object, he has the onus of the shvua. The onus of the shvua rests upon him, and then what that does is that avoids any possibility that maybe, or not any possibility, it minimizes the possibility that maybe he does have the item with him and he's just lying. With the hope that if we impose the shvua upon him, he who has the object, that'll root out any possibility that he is lying. Well, but again, we're going to define this. We'll say, Amun Bey, says the Gemara. Ahaya. So we'll say, ask the Gemara, specifically that last statement of who swears, me is Shapi, Kaldin Ansel. So we'll say, what case is that going on? So Ilay Ma'aseifa, if you want to say it's about the latter part of the Mishnah, we say, Fukle, the Shua, Gabi Malveh. And we're going ahead and we're learning it out. So again, it's easy enough in the last case, Rabbi Osai, it's obvious that the malva, that the lender is making the shvua. Because we must remember again, in the second part of the Mishnah, what was happening, that was where, again, it is the borrower who's making the claim. And the borrower is claiming that ultimately, again, the pikadon was worth more than the value of the debt. And it is the malva, it is the lender who is quote unquote modeba mixas. So of course he's gonna have to take the shvua in that case. Amr Shmuel, therefore Shmuel says, Areisha. In fact, again, I will say that last statement of the Mishnah is going on the first part of the Mishnah. That last statement in the Mishnah is going on the first part of the Mishnah. V'chinim Rabbi Akiva Barav, Areisha. V'chinim Rabbi Yochanan, Areisha. Umay Reisha. Also, when we say Reisha, what Reisha is going on? Reisha de Seifa. Or Reisha Seif Gemara says, my Reisha, Seifa de Reisha. Excuse me. It's talking about the Seifa of the first part of the Mishnah. We'll say, what's the case? Selihil v'sichalav. So we'll say, I go ahead and I say to Ruvain, I lent you $1,000, v'shekel hayashave. But the mashkin was only worth 500. Vala omerlo, ki ela selihil v'sani. Yes, I admit that you owed me $1,000. Ushlosha dinarim hayashave. But lemaisa, I'm sorry. I say to Ruvain, Selihil v'sichalav, I lent you $1,000, shekel hayashava, and ultimately, again, the mashkon was worth $500, and Ruvain says, you lent me $1,000, and the mashkon was worth $700. So we'll say, what's talocha? Chayif, d'shvua gabi lovehi. So we'll say, so what happens? On a technical level, what do we call that? We call that mol debemiktsas. So we'll say, ultimately, again, so what happens in mol debemiktsas? Who should have to swear in that case, Rabbi Osai? The lova should have to swear. The borrower should have to swear in that case. But I will say, yeah, what does the Mishnah teach me? V'shaklua rabbanon milove v'shajuha amalva. But I will say, Chazal do something very interesting. In that case, they take the shvua off the malva. They take the shvua off the lova, off the borrower, and they place it on the malva. Why, Rabbi Osai? Because out of concern that since we're talking about an object which was in the possession of the malva, we're concerned that what could happen? Maybe the malva really does have the object in his possession. He's just lying. In order to go ahead, and he's going to produce it after the lova swears. So in order to avoid any unnecessary complications for the lova, we take the shvua off the shoulders of the lova, because the lova is really the one who's modib and mixas. So we take the shvua off his shoulders, and we place it upon the shoulders of the malva. V'hashta da'amu Rav Ashi, de'kaimalon, v'zen nishpa shtena b'shuso, v'zen nishpa kama shava, hachi kamar. Now we'll say, now that we have the shita of Rabbi, now that we have the shita of Rav Ashi, now we'll say, now we will discuss We actually saw this in Bab Metzia, but we're going to discuss it more in just a little bit. Let's say Rashi holds that Lemaisa, again, when it comes to Pikadon, both of them have to take a Shvuah. Let's say, right? So the Malveh, the lender, has to take a Shvuah that what? That the object is not in his possession. And the Lova has to take a Shvua that says what Rabbi Osai, how much the object was actually worth. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says, actually, by the way, not just by loan. Ravashi's statement is actually, Rabbi Osai, by a Shomer Sachar. Right? By a Shomer Sachar makes a claim that the object was stolen. The object was taken or was stolen. Ultimately, again, he has to take a Shvua that the object is no longer in his possession. And the owner of the object has to swear about the value of the object itself. So we'll say, so therefore again, Hachikomer, this is what the Mishnah teaches me. Me Nishba Tchila. So we'll say, watch this. So, but the Gemara just to understand the progression over here. So in the case where I say Ruvain, I lent you $1,000, the Pikadon was worth 500, right? Ruvain says, you lent me $1,000, the Pikadon was worth 700. We'll say, that's a technical case of Mod Debemiktsas, and therefore what? The Loveh should have to swear. Now the Gemara is teaching me that what Chazal did was, they took the Shvuah from the Loveh, and they put it onto the Malveh. Now the Gemara says, but by the way, now that we accept the Shita of Ravashi, what does Ravashi say about say? That essentially whenever you deposit an object with someone and that object is lost, both parties have to take a Shvuah. The party who was watching the object has to swear that he doesn't have the object, and the owner of the object swears to what? Right. The value of the object. Now that we accept that premise, what is the Mishnah coming to teach me? Hachi Kamar, mi nishba tchila. We'll say, who swears first? Who swears first? To which the Gemara answers, mi shapikadon etzlo. The one who was in possession of the object swears first. So for our purposes, who does that refer to? That refers to the malveh, to the lender. And he has to swear first. Why? Out of concern that if we make the loveh, the borrower swear first, maybe he will swear first, and what's going to happen? The malveh will produce the object afterwards. So essentially, in order to avoid any type of situation where the malveh is lying and is really still in possession of the object, because both of them, Rabbi Osai, at least according now that we accept the Rambam's Rav Ashi, are going to have to take a shvuah, we make the malveh take his shvuah first, and the loveh take his shvuah afterwards. Amr Shmuel. Hayman de Osfei Alpha Zuzi the Chavrin. Well, so listen to this case. This is actually quite interesting. If someone goes ahead and lends money to his friend, so we'll say, I lend $1,000 to Ruvain. And what happens? Umashkun le kata de maglo. And I will say, what does Ruvain give me as collateral? He gives me again an axe handle. An axe handle. And I will say, this is not an axe handle made of like some unique species of wood that's worth $1,000. It's mamish kishmo kenu. Home Depot axe handle. He gives me again the axe handle as collateral. So we'll say, what's talach? This is actually quite amazing. Avad kata de magla, avad ilfazuze. We'll say, if I, the lender, lose the axe handle, I lost my money. In other words, we'll say, that axe handle is considered to be a full collateral for the loan, and therefore, if I lose the axe handle, I've lost my ability to collect the loan. Rashi says, avad alfazuze. Rashi says over here, the savar v'kabil, both sides, because the assumption the Gemara is working with over here is as follows, that under normal circumstances, when I receive collateral, essentially what am I doing? I'm accepting that collateral as the full value of the debt. Independent as to what the actual value of that object is, I accept that collateral as full value of the debt. So if I lend Ruvain $1,000 and he gives me an axe handle, even the axe handle is worth $20. But by accepting that as collateral, I accept that axe handle as the full value of the debt. Therefore, if I lose the axe handle, I no longer have any ability to collect. So again, Rashi, the suburb, that's the operative phrase. The Savar V'Kabil, I've accepted upon myself the value of this axe handle as full collateral for the debt. So we'll say, now again, obviously Rashi just points out over here, if the axe handle is still in existence, so of course, again, I do not agree to accept that axe handle in lieu of payment for my debt, so I still want to get repaid for the debt. It's just only in the dramatic case where I lose the collateral, where ultimately I no longer have any recourse for collection of the debt. So the Gemara says, Aval akata demagla aval alfa zuze. Aval tarti kasoi lo. This is very interesting. But let's say again, Ruvain gave me two axe handles. two axe handles. So let's say for two axe handles, halacha wouldn't apply. Now, what does it mean? Take a look at Rashi. Aval tarti kasa lo aminan chad kaba b'chamishmiya v'chad b'chamishmiya v'avet chad b'minayu lo lifsin chamishmiya d'halo parish chad b'palga v'chad b'palga ela tarvayu kablinu b'chad b'mashkono v'lo b'piron d'v'chevan d'tihadulei mixas mashkono ma'y d'chasra nafshe minei patrash l'shem mishav. Let's listen to this. Let's say I lend Reuven $1,000 and he gives me two axe handles. So we'll say, we don't say that one axe handle represents $500 and the other axe handle represents $500. Rather, what? Both collectively are considered to be the mashkon. Therefore, Atabo say, as long as some part of the mashkon is still in existence, when the debt becomes due, what happens? I give back the remaining axe handle and I get back my money and I pay him the value of the lost axe handle. Rav Nachman, or Rav Nachman says, no, afilu tarti kasosi. Even two axe handles, avad chada, avad chamishmiya, avad idach, avad kule. We'll say, even two axe handles, we'll say, so comes along Rav Nachman and says, no, that when I get two axe handles, each axe handle represents half of the debt. Therefore, again, if I lose an axe handle, I've lost $500. If I lose the other axe handle, I lose the other $500. Aval, we'll say, listen to this, aval kata v'naska lo. We'll say, watch this. However, so we'll say, here's what we have so far. We have a machlokus between Shmuel and Rav Nachman. What Shmuel Bose says is a dramatic statement, which again, we're going to have to further clarify, which is what? I lend Reuven $1,000, he gives me an axe head. So Bose says, the way Shmuel understands the nature of collateral is that collateral is accepted in potential lieu of repayment of the debt. Therefore, again, there were what Shmuel calls savir v'kabyal. I accept this object as the full value of the debt. Therefore, what according to Shmuel, if I lose that axe handle, we'll say, what happens? I lost my ability to collect the debt. However, if Reuven gave me two axe handles, we'll say, I accept two axe handles, we do not go ahead and say two axe handles, each axe handle corresponds to $500 of the debt. That we do not say. Rather what? Rather again, we say two collectively represent the collateralized unit. Therefore, if I lost one, I go back, I collect my money from Reuven, and I pay him the value of the lost axe handle. Rav Nachman comes along and says, no. When there are two, we view two as 500 and 500. Therefore, you lose one. You lost the ability to collect half of the debt, and you can collect the remaining part of the debt. However, so listen to this, and with this we'll stop. Aval kasa v'nasga lo. So listen to this case. What happens if Reuven gives me two items as collateral? A kata, which is again an axe handle, and naska. They both say naska ultimately means a piece of silver. First of all, take a look at Rashi just a moment. Aval kata v'naska lo amina naska kabel b'palga decheva demidi dechazel peironhu lo kabli ale ela b'demesh shaviyav. So we'll listen to this. So I lend Reuven $1,000, he gives me a piece of silver and an axe handle. So we'll say, in this case over here, we do not say that half of the debt is linked to the axe handle, and half of the debt is linked to the silver. Why not? Because ultimately, again, we'll say, since the silver is a real item of value, therefore, again, we look at it different. Because he gives me silver, what he's clearly giving me is an item of value. Therefore, again, the silver corresponds to its value. I should say it differently. The value of the silver corresponds to the same value of the debt itself. Therefore, again, avad naska, avad palga. I'm sorry. I just lost the place. Avakata v'naska lo. So therefore, again, I will say, this is in Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman comes along and says, when do I say that ultimately, again, if you have two objects, each corresponds to 50% of the debt, that's when what? The objects that are being given are really don't correspond to the value of the debt at all. But it's axe handles, so if Rav Nachman will say two axe handles means one for 500, one for 500, but when Reuven is going out of his way to what? Give me items for collateral that I will say what? Have their own inherent value. Then what he's doing is, he is directly linking the value of the collateral to the value of the debt. All right, so we'll stop over here by the sheet of the Nardoim. We'll stop over here. Again, we'll continue with a small daf tomorrow, so we can stop over here. So just understand where we're leaving off of. We're leaving off in the middle of trying to figure out what the relationship between collateral and the actual debt itself. So far now we seem to have a three-way machlokes between Shmuel, Rav Nachman, and Amir Tzashem. We'll see the Nardoim as well. So we'll pick up Amir Tzashem with this tomorrow. Shkoyach.